This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi and welcome to episode 572 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from shuddersincpodcast.com and joining me once again from creativephotoworkshops.com.au from Melbourne, Victoria, it is Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Yes, thank you for asking. Didn't we have this conversation 5 minutes ago?
We did, but we're doing it all again. Why are we doing it all again, Glyn?
Deja vu all over again.
That's right. John Fogarty, thank you very much.
Does he have something to do with Deja Vu?
He had an album called Deja Vu All Over Again.
I listen to good music, so I wouldn't know.
It's John Fogarty, dude. He was the lead singer of Creedence.
As I said.
Oh, sacrilege. Sacrilege. Anyway, what have you been up to in the last 2 weeks?
Well, not listening to Creedence, that's for sure.
Neither have I, for that matter.
Nothing. It doesn't feel like 2 weeks. It's just like about 3 days.
Yeah, right. Well, it's been about 10.
The time has gone like, whoosh. Yeah. The last few days of school holidays, they're just kind of running around doing school holidays, you know, fun stuff for the kids, and then boring stuff, getting stuff organised for going back to school.
My
youngest returned to school yesterday.
Right.
And it was off sick today. It's going to be off sick tomorrow.
Oh, shit.
Survived an entire day. Admittedly, she was sick when I sent her yesterday.
Right. Okay.
So I don't think it actually helped any that being forced to go to school. But you can't miss the very first day, especially when you're in an entirely new class with an entirely new kid.
Yeah.
You can't not be. So it's already bad enough missing yesterday and no, today and tomorrow. Yeah, that's the joy of school, or reinfection, as we've always called it. Yeah. So yeah, not a great deal. I've been down the footy, fun up in the footy, yep. Boys, kicking the footy. So I posted to this online footy Facebook group, and garnered a lot of fans over the journey. So I've been doing that for about 4 years, maybe 3 years. I've been going down at least once or twice a week photographing them, and they're posting 40, 50 images and giving a bit of a rundown.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, what I observed. So I've gathered quite a following. And so a lot of people, when they come to sync training, which might they do, you know, once or twice in a pre-season, they'll want to come and see the guy who keeps them connected. So it's kind of nice. But it does stop me taking photos when I'm trying to be nice to you. So kind of, so that's only photography I've been doing, I think. Oh, no, I lied. See, I had lunch with a lovely friend of mine today, a lifelong friend of mine. She always wants me to do a new headshot for her every time I see her.
Right.
But, of course, I never have anything with me but my iPhone. So every year, and we only catch up like once or twice a year. And once or twice a year, I take a new headshot for her for her social. And just use my iPhone. It's always such a cool... Yeah, I mean, using Lightwell, using iPhone tools, using Snapseed to do a bit of post-production on it, all this does a fabulous job. And, it's such a simplistic way of taking photos. It's really quite refreshing. So I took a couple of nice portraits today as well. Oh, and the only thing I've been doing with photography is I've moved over to Blue Sky.
Oh, that's the Twitter replacement?
Sort of, I think. Twitter/Instagram/I don't know what it's actually supposed to be. And I don't quite understand it. And I'm probably not using it properly. But I've got my 78 followers or something.
Right.
76 followers, there we are. Yeah, so I've done a little bit of photography this last 10 days. But,
cool.
And I think I might have run a workshop or that. I don't know. I ran a workshop recently. It's all vague now as to whether it's before the last podcast. Because time, if we took recording 10 days ago, and it seems like 3 days ago, that workshop seems like about a month ago, but it might have been 6 days ago now.
Right.
Pretty confused. Yeah. So, And yourself, have you been doing anything exciting since we last spoke?
Well, actually, yes. Last weekend, Kath said to me, oh, there's a Max DePayne exhibition on.
Who?
Max DePayne, the Australian photographer from the 50s, 40s, 50s. Anyway, you would know some of his work if you saw it. Anyway,
yeah.
It turns out, no, you would.
No, I don't look at the photography.
Anyway, So it turns out that there's this suburb not far from where we are called Rathmines. And during the Second World War, Rathmines was a seaplane base.
Okay. Seaplane, biplane.
And Max de Payne was stationed there. He was in the Air Force, and apparently over the course of his life, like, he just, everywhere he went, he carried a camera. And so whilst I'm familiar with some of his personal project photography, which is kind of the stuff that most people would be familiar with, you know, he has this, there's a famous image of his, of a sunbather, where the sunbather is lying face down on the sand with his arms crossed and his head on his arms, and that's the view you get of this sunbather, is just his head on his arms. Anyway,
you're telling it, Jimmy.
Whilst he was stationed at the Rathmines base, he took a lot of photos of everyday life on the base. And so this whole exhibition is very documentary in nature. So they're not, you know, wow photos. You know, they don't blow you away with the composition and the leading lines and the fantastic light or anything like that, because it's really just documentary style photography of, you know, the day-to-day machinations of an Air Force base.
That job.
Yeah, pretty much. But what I found interesting, like, the photos were okay, you know, there was nothing great, nothing awful, was that amongst the plaques on the wall that told the story of his time there, something I was not aware of was that he became one of Australia's most highly regarded, and this is a term I'd never heard before, camoufleur. And this is someone who designs camouflage. And because of his artistic nature and his photography, I think he was in, he did some painting as well. The army said, well, you understand color and you understand light, so we want you to, you know, work on developing camouflage so that we can hide, you know, things like aeroplanes that are sitting on tarmacs from being visible from overhead. And, of course, one of the things that is, you know, the big giveaway with any military installation when viewed from the air are the shadows that the buildings and the equipment cast on the ground. So one of the key attributes of good camouflage is breaking up those shadows.
So the better you are in your job, the less you see of them.
That's right. Exactly. So, yeah, I found that really interesting that he...
So wouldn't it be just better to go along and paint a whole bunch of different shadows on the runways? Like different shadows?
Well, the idea was not to make it look like there was more stuff. The idea was to make it look like there was less.
You just camouflage the runway. They can't find that. Start with the big problem. There's a great big long black thing in the middle of the desert. That stands there. Paint the runway yellow.
Yeah, so he developed some of our most successful camouflage, and once the test pieces had been made, they then sent him up in the air in an aeroplane with his camera to then take photographs of these camouflaged, you know, buildings and aeroplanes and whatnot to determine how successful the camouflage had been. And, yeah. So I thought that was really interesting. It was something I never knew about him. I never knew of a camoufleur being a job description. So there was that.
You wouldn't imagine there'd be a big market for it.
No, I would imagine not. Not a lot of job openings.
Yeah, it's not like they bring you around every couple of weeks to design a new one.
No, exactly.
You want to take a long, long time to design one. You get the big
pay packet. Mate, in the last 2 weeks, we've gone into a new ice age, so we need to redesign the camouflage.
Why is it a new ice age? Have you been cold up there? Or do you mean globally? I don't know.
No, I meant, you know, imagine his boss is coming along and going, in the last 2 weeks,
I can't believe this is what happened to us. Oh, I see where you're coming from. I say, surely it's been hot up there too.
Yeah, it's been toasty up here. Yeah,
it's a very wild weather.
Absolutely, and I saw a story through the week from digitalcameraworld.com. It was a post titled, Instagram is dead for photographers and TikTok's future is uncertain, so people are flocking back to an old faithful platform. And essentially they were asking the question, is Flickr due for a revival? Because, you know, Instagram has become very video centric. It's really, you know, not where you see much photography anymore. And TikTok's always been video, so I don't know. I haven't really looked at Flickr in so long. I would have no idea whether anything has changed in the last 15 years, because it's probably that long.
No more, yeah.
It's probably that long since I've looked at it.
I agree. I've not looked either. I mean, I agree with TikTok is uncertain, and I think Instagram is more the politics behind it more so than the access to photographers and things like that. But, it's kind of your dog's going nuts again. Ellie, what's he doing tonight?
He is.
It's Chinese New Year. The fireworks going on.
No, he's just being painful tonight. See, the thing is, on a Thursday night, Kath and I go out, we do trivia. And so it means we get home late, but normally we're home at about 8:30, which gives us about half an hour, you know, for us to do some things, and we feed the dog and we, you know, spend some time with the dog. But tonight we were late getting home. It was like 8:55 by the time we got home. And so I've not had any time to spend with the dog, so he's just being mental because no one's paying him any attention. So he's just going to have to suck it up until we finish recording, and then I'll spend some time with him. But anyway.
So I've just been flicking through this Flickr article.
Yeah.
I really think it's time for a new platform.
Right.
Yeah. I know you've got your 500px and your 1x, and there's lots of other photography things out there, but it's just a general sharing, photo sharing app that doesn't require groups and special interest. You know, just maybe just have a sharing app with simple categories, you know, 5 or 8 or 10 different categories of photos, and people just pair. Doesn't need 400 hashtags for each photo. It's either a landscape or it's a portrait or it's black and white or it's macro or it's astro or it's astro with a red shirt, it's astro with a blue shirt. Right? And the waterfall with the yellow top, the waterfall with the green top, the waterfall with the red top. All the different categories of photography.
Hashtag Milky Way flashlight tent.
Yeah. wouldn't it be nice to have a photo sharing app that's just so dead simple?
Absolutely.
That's just, this is the type of photo, this is its category, follow me, don't follow me. I'm going to just be so nice. No video allowed.
Yep.
Yeah, no video, no advertising.
Yep.
Yeah, just here's me photos, like them or not. Yeah, and you can probably charge $1.99 US a month subscription fee to have a simple.
Ooh.
No, so see, Instagram, you're bombarded with all the stuff you just said bad about Instagram or Facebook or all the things that you're bombarded with, stuff that you don't want to see.
Yep.
And things that are of no interest to you.
Yep.
I mean, my Facebook feed at the moment is completely bombarded with things like Italia or Beautiful Italia as a group and sharing crappy AI photos.
Yeah.
Or David Attenborough friends,
yep,
crappy AI photos.
Yep.
My entire feed is these groups and this type of imagery, nothing real.
Yeah.
Every second post of my group, I have to block. So I pay $1.99 a month, have a sharing app that I've just shared photos, and you can have the categories that you have interest in that you like.
Yep.
And that's the feed you get.
Yeah.
And you can spend, let's say you're going on a trip somewhere. Excuse me, let's say you're going to Scotland, let's say. For that couple of months leading up, you could tick Scotland as one of your things you want to see in your feed.
Yeah.
You'll suddenly start getting some photo ideas for the place you want to go to.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just dead simple.
Yeah, interesting.
You get a million users at $2 a month. Yeah, you're making some coin.
Yeah.
Enough to keep the thing maintained and updated, and it wouldn't need an awful lot of maintenance. It might need maintenance, but it wouldn't need a million updates. It wouldn't
even
need UIs changing all the time because you're not trying to sell something else. You're just going to say, well, this is it. This is what you got.
Yeah.
That would be my ideal. As long as everyone flocked, of course, to my feed and I got millions
of course. Of course.
be my only proviso to all of that.
Yeah.
Since 2005, Shutters Inc. has been a labour of love. But beyond the time required to produce it, there is also a financial commitment. If you find value in the podcast and would like to help keep the servers running, hit up the Patreon link, which is in the show notes. Even a couple of dollars a month will help. Much appreciated. Now, back to the podcast.
I think that if Flickr making a comeback, no, it won't.
Right.
But does that mean there's people calling out for something new? They're not being satisfied with what's out there.
Yeah.
Well, and there's enough people saying that, then there's enough opportunity. Which is something I've never understood with this TikTok business. Why everyone left TikTok, well, didn't leave, but when they thought TikTok was closing down, they jumped to the Chinese-owned Red Note.
Yeah.
You know? There was enough time from when Trump in 2017 or whatever, we started wanting to close down TikTok, that's 8 years ago, for someone to come up with an alternative.
Yeah.
That wasn't owned by who knows who.
Yep.
And, yeah, in US-based, it needs to be just a simple video sharing platform.
Yep.
And research what makes TikTok popular, and that's they're not forced. There's actual genuine freedom of speech and genuine. Yeah, if you put something up there, there's a chance people are going to see it.
Yeah,
is what makes TikTok popular. Someone could have come up with an alternative. It's been 8 years.
Yeah,
they've been trying to ban it for.
I genuinely think that the whole impetus for wanting to ban it was simply to protect Zuckerberg and anyone else who was an American billionaire who had a video sharing platform.
Yeah, and Elon Musk and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Bizarre. But said there's an opportunity. They've got the money to make a new platform.
Because as someone said, it might have been on This Week in Tech, or it might have been somewhere else, but I heard someone say, what about Temu? Temu has way more information about everybody than TikTok does. You know, TikTok, you can be just an anonymous user scrolling, you know, till your finger falls off. But the number of people who order stuff from Temu, which is a Chinese company, and no one's got a problem with Temu. It's like,
I was when it first came out, but it all got forgotten for cheap prices.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I saw a statistic about the wealth of Bezos, Zuckerberg, and Musk.
Yep.
That Zuckerberg is earning $4 billion a day.
Jeez.
In profit. So his wealth goes up $4 billion a day. You've got some money there to invest in a better video sharing platform.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got the lazy $4 billion a day. You could spend half a day saying, yeah, here's your bill, somebody, start making something.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even notice it was missing. It'd be like reaching your pocket for that 5 cent piece you need to try to unscrew a screw.
Exactly.
It's like the same equivalent, you know. And $2 billion would build a reasonable platform, you think?
I saw a great thing on either Facebook or Instagram yesterday that said a lot of people don't understand the difference in scale between a million and a billion.
And
it was a million seconds is 11 and a half days. A billion seconds is 31 years and 5 months. Right, okay then.
Zuckerberg, it's like the 30th today. So he's made $120 billion profit this year so far.
It's insane.
That's the 30th of January.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they can afford. They can afford to end world hunger.
Exactly.
I mean, for one month's income could do that.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like this whole farce about TikTok being a problem. They have the money to fix it.
Yeah.
If it actually was a real problem, but as I said, that's not actually what the problem is.
Yeah.
We want you to use our platform, not somebody else's, and we can force you to do it. You know?
Yeah.
What you going to do? Anyway, that's enough semi-politics.
That's it. So yeah, that's about it.
Annoy our one US member.
Yeah.
No, you sent me some photos.
I did send you some other photos from Western Australia.
I thought you were going to send me your good ones.
Ah, no, I never said that.
Yeah, a few of them are the same ones I've seen before. But there's one quite nice one in the pinnacle thing when you put your torch on the ground or something.
Oh, yep. Yep.
And trying to make it look like there's a bit of a fire going or something, a bit primeval, you know?
Well, it was simply a case of, I had this little, you know, battery-powered light panel with me, and what I had noticed about that particular scene, because it was obviously in blue hour, the sun was below the horizon, so you were starting to lose contrast, you know, between all of the limestone rocks and the sand. And so I just thought, you know, maybe just throwing a little bit of light behind one of those, you know, pinnacles will just, you know, create a bit of shape and texture and depth. And so, yeah, so that's why I did it.
I mean, when I look at it, all I can hear is the music from 2001 Space Odyssey.
Nice.
I'm waiting for someone to walk up and start fighting each other with bones or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of it. But I can see, like, the next image long gone now, which is obviously in blue hour as well, you said there's not a lot of contrast in anything anymore. It's all kind of flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you get your first planet out, but it looks like it might be a bit of Venus in the sky there. Well, there's two stars or two bits of dust or anything. But, yeah, you can see as soon as that light disappears, everything's muted and soft, and you kind of have to wait for pitch black then lighten up yourself, don't you?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the Roy Morris platform you were talking about.
Yep.
The Busselton Jetty.
So you've obviously got them out of, like, file name order. They're in some sort of randomised order in your system.
But what's the story with the dead bug on the sand dune?
Oh, so I told you about the hour and a quarter that I spent up in the sand dunes, yeah, and getting absolutely microwaved in that time. So I was walking up this sand dune, and yeah, every now and again you could see little bits of debris on the sand dunes, but there was this prominent black spot halfway up the sand dune, so I just started walking towards it, and I get up there.
I wonder what that is.
Yeah, and it's a dead cicada. And I just thought, I love this, the fact that there is just this random thing, which was a cicada, just on the middle of this windblown sand. And so I thought,
Perfectly, it's on his back with his legs up in the air.
Yes.
It's a classic I'm dead pose. Which is probably why it's a classic pose, because it art imitates real life, you know. The problem is, of course, there's no scale, nothing to give you scale in the photo.
So that's right.
You just have no idea how big this thing is.
That's
is it. Tiny, is it huge?
Yeah.
Very funny stuff.
7220, which won't have interested you one bit, which is a, you know, just looking out to sea off the top of this cliff. I used a black card technique. That's 8 seconds exposure, and I've held something over the top half of the lens.
Oh, yeah.
And then over that 8 seconds, just slowly
jiggly.
Drawn it up so that the bright sky didn't overexpose before the dark, you know, foreground had had a chance to expose.
It was worth the effort.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to keep the sarcasm out of my mouth.
No, you weren't.
Yeah, our lovely friend Mike Holm had taught me that technique many years ago in Dublin. But he does it more of a fast jiggly move.
Oh, okay.
Rather than a slow, yeah, so he just kind of jiggles his hand up and down, even just his hand. He doesn't worry about a black card.
Yeah, right.
Just his hand up in front and move it around to reduce the amount of light coming in at whichever part of the image he wants to. Basically dodge and burn.
Yeah, right.
So that's a different technique. It's the same principle, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah.
There is something about that image, though,
yeah,
that almost feels like the top half of the image has less contrast. It's a lot more muted,
yep,
than the foreground, almost like it hasn't been exposed properly.
Okay.
The feel to it, like there was something on your lens, or there was something blocking, and maybe that's just that not quite getting that timing right for how much to draw it up. I would just be curious if you went into your dark table and just worked on that, almost from the end of the green semicircle of greenery,
yep,
upwards. If you worked up there and worked with some dodge and burn or a little bit of more contrast through there, how much that image would start to pop.
Yeah, right.
It has a funny vibe to it. Then I couldn't figure out what it was, but when you say the black card technique, it makes me think straight away, maybe that's what caused it. And if you look on the left-hand side of the image, where you've got that the raised bit of sand dune or whatever it is, the highest part of that on the farthest left of the image, it's a very different shade and tone,
yep,
than the rest of it.
Yeah.
and it just kind of feels like that's where the black car was maybe there a fraction too long or something. It had some, but otherwise, I mean, that image would have been impossible because otherwise they had a gradual filter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All that kind of stuff, yeah. But it's a fun, I must admit, I've used that technique occasionally since then, especially when traveling. So I don't take filters with me. I might do that when traveling, not that I take tripods very often anyway.
Yeah.
But I found that it's a technique I've enjoyed doing. It's kind of fun. And it adds that bit of unpredictability again to the shot, which is
totally
fun enough,
you know? Yep.
It's a bit of fun to do. Any other images there that you particularly like?
I'm just flicking through them. The one with the sun going down behind the yacht, that's shot at 500 mil across the bay at Busselton.
Big lens, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love that effect with the big lens. And then people say, oh, yeah, photoshopped it.
No, not at all.
I know how to take photos.
Yeah.
I reckon you can crop that tighter and make it a bit more interesting, though.
Okay.
It would have made the sun bigger again.
Right.
I think the far right third doesn't add anything to the photo.
Yep, fair enough.
And if you were to bring, I'm just doing a quick, if I crop almost the middle of that frame, it really emphasizes the yacht and really brings out the sun and brings those two really, really strong elements, yeah.
Okay.
Which I think looks really, really cool. So just give it a try. Just try cropping that right in and just to see how that. I think the story changes quite a lot when you do that. And I like it. It's a nice image, but I think it's a better image, even tighter.
Right. Fair enough.
But that's my taste, though. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. I just think because the yacht, the more I look at it, the more I think about it, because the yacht's quite dark, it blends a bit into the background. It's a dark tone against the dark tone.
Yep.
And it kind of starts to disappear a little bit. As soon as you crop it in, it's like, oh. Yeah, I see what the two story elements are. It's probably the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, right.
But I'm just going to, I'm actually doing it on my computer now, doing the crop I'm talking about so you can see it. And of course, the advantage of cropping in as well is it makes the sun even more bigger.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
And we like the more bigger sun. So I'll just save that to there. Let me see if I can share this to our little chattery.
And you went and messed with the saturation again.
Oh, of course, yeah, that's what I do. Yeah. But see how much the yacht stands out now, though?
Yeah.
You've got two main elements that all you can look at. All my eye can see now is yacht sun.
Yeah.
It doesn't see the other boats. It doesn't see the nothing off to the right. It just becomes a more, but I mean, that's me, though. I like simple photos. I'm a simple man, Bruce. I like a simple story with as few words as possible so I can read it.
Yep. Yeah, and then the rest of it was, you know, mostly the pinnacle stuff. There was the, I don't know what the correct term is, but what we would call a black boy here in Australia, which is a native grass tree, yeah.
Yeah, but they're fascinating plants in themselves as well.
Yeah, and there was this whole area heading up north of Perth where it was just like a forest of the things.
Yeah.
I haven't really got a great position there because there were other areas where there were just hundreds of them. They were just, it was thick as, anyway.
There's a part of the road between Melbourne and Sydney where there's a big area of those as well.
Right.
And you get out and it's like a rest stop on this major highway, and you can do it. It's like a little loop walk through them.
Oh, right.
It's so full of massive cobwebs. I mean, like, 6 foot wide cobweb, and by the thousands, you just don't want to walk through because there's massive spider webs absolutely everywhere. I've never seen the spiders, but the webs are friggin' huge. So
yeah, right.
And there must be like 500 of these trees, and there must be about 8,000 cobwebs. Yeah, it's a little too scary for this old guy, I tell you. They're a very iconic Australian tree, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to be that tall, they've got to be a couple hundred years old or whatever.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
We have some cool stuff in our country, dude.
Totally. And that's about it.
Oh, I just remember I did go and take another photo last week.
Oh, yeah?
I finally got, after days, upon I went out trying to take photographs for 5 straight nights.
Right.
And 5 straight nights of overcast in exactly the spot where I wanted no clouds to be was clouds. The rest of the sky was clear, except this one spot. this guy's a giant photograph, Comet C3 Atlas, which is one of the brightest comets we've had in donkey's years.
Yeah.
And it was so bright, but parts of the time when it was visible in the Northern Hemisphere, it could be photographed during the day.
Yeah, right.
And it was, I was seeing some great photos that people were posting, but every single night it was impossible for me to photograph. And every night it was getting duller and duller and duller and duller and duller. So I finally got a clear night.
Yeah.
And even with binoculars, you could no longer see it.
Right?
And my apps weren't being particular. I think it might have been like near a magnetic pole or something, because my apps were not really showing clearly where it was. So I was doing like 30-second long exposures.
Yeah.
And in a narrow field of view.
Yeah.
Across the sky, trying to find this damn thing. And I finally saw this, the barest hint of something show up. And then because we found it in the camera, we could then just find it in binoculars. If you didn't look where it was, you could kind of see it in your periphery.
Right.
But it was so faint that the tail and the head of the comet were the same brightness.
Oh, no.
So and there was no variation of brightness across the entire thing. But it was still cool to see. And it won't be around for another 100,000 years, that comet. So it was cool to just see it with your eyes. And I went out with my kids. Both kids came out for 4 nights. One decided he wasn't coming out the last night, and the other one came. So she got to see it through the binoculars. So that was pretty cool. So
yeah.
That was a bit of fun. So, yeah, that was another photo I took this week. And cool. It's garbage and slightly soft and kind of blurry. And but, you know, it existed. I got it.
Yeah.
I managed to get the freaking photo. And, you know, I'll send you the photo. You know, just, you can see just how bad it was.
Oh, wow.
And pretty average comet photo.
Yep.
But it's my average comet photo.
Excellent.
Yeah. And then the day, that's all. So all that matters when we take our photos in the day is
that's
my
it.
Photo.
That's
not
it.
Somebody else's better one that I saw on the internet.
Exactly.
It's my one.
Exactly.
My experience in doing it. And I tell you, as frustrating as it was, I mean, we're talking, it's clear until 7:30 at night.
Yep.
And there's comets there at 9:30. By the time you drive an hour to get out of city lights,
yeah,
the more you drive, the more and more clouds come every single time. So, but that's all part of the experience. It's like anything photography.
Yeah.
If it was easy and if it was great every single time, we wouldn't do it.
That's it.
And the reward after 5 nights of persevering, even though it's shit, it's my shit. You know? It's my shit. Anyway, that's it for me for the last 10 days of photography. Anyway.
Yep.
Ooh.
Happy to make this a short one.
Yeah, well, I think we've been talking a fair long time.
Oh, we have, but there's so much to cut out. The dog barking. And,
leave it all in. Put it out raw. Shutters Inc. raw. No, yeah. Actually not, because we said racist things.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good couple of weeks.
You too, mate. I'll talk to you soon.
Will do.
Look after your dog.
Yeah, see ya.
You've been listening to Shutters Inc. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.